What's up, everyone? Welcome to Friday's Power Panel. Mark Thompson and Ben Mankiewicz join me today for both hours, actually.
Yeah,
it's exciting.
Which is rare.
I got
excited about it.
Twice on Twitter today.
Mm-hmm.
If I was on hiatus from TY,
because you haven't been around.
No,
you do look. You look great. You look rested and tan.
Well, thank you. I'm not rested.
Okay. Well, at least you look it.
You've been on the road, haven't you?
We moved. We have a new house. We've been there almost exactly 60 days, and I think I've been there 21 nights.
Something like
that. Yeah. So it's been exciting, but it's been a lot going on.
I can imagine.
I have not left town. I have nothing new, no house that's new, nothing that's new. I am honored. I'm always available to answer the cry.
Mm-hmm.
When I see the bat beam go up, I'm in the car and I'm excited to be on the panel. So thank
awesome,
you.
Awesome.
You have the Mark Rylance glasses. I like those.
Yes, these are Bridges spies. Very good grab.
Yeah.
Never mind. Actually, just because I started the thought, and then I'm going to shut up.
Okay.
On my Instagram, you know, it's all about Instagram.
Yeah.
On my Instagram, when I got these glasses, I put up the.
Oh, you put up Mark Rylance?
Mark Rylance, mm-hmm. And so you can see for yourself the actual comparison.
Best supporting actor for Bridge of Spies.
Indeed.
So I have glasses as well that I use while I'm reading, and I should be using during the show, but I never do. And today, Irina said she likes them.
They're very.
Let me see. I mean, those are what we like
sexy
to call foxy.
Are they really?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Totally.
No way.
Yeah.
No, when your hair's in a bun, we're already set for the moment in the movie.
Yeah.
When you take the glasses off, you let your hair down, and they're like, holy, she's beautiful. Who
yeah
knew?
Yeah. You're either going to fight crime or get naked. One of the two. Yeah,
right,
that's what
it is. Everyone's always surprised, and you're like, hey, you know, she looked great with her hair up in a bun and the glasses on. She was already pretty. It's not a.
So true. All right. Okay. So let's do some announcements before we get to the stories. And of course, there are a ton of stories after Trump gave an interview to Reuters. Lots of interesting things said. But first, let's talk a little bit about political activism. This Saturday, TYT joins Our Revolution, and the People's Climate March. These are both protests, two separate protests taking place. You can join Nomi, Jordan, and Cenk while they give talks at the Our Revolution rally before the People's Climate March. Meetup time is 10:30 a.m. The location is Union Station Area 5. You can sign up by going to tytnetwork.com/resistance to get text updates. Also this Sunday.
By the way, that should be, I think we should point out, in Washington, D.C.
In Washington, D.C.,
yeah.
My bad. So that's why Cenk's not here right now. He's, you know, preparing for all of this. Also this Sunday, the resistance rally in D.C. with Cenk and other TYT personalities. For more information, sign up for text message or email alerts at tytnetwork.com/resistance. Okay? All right. Let's get started with some stories. Our field reporters at TYT Politics have put together a video showing what Trump has managed to achieve in his agenda during his first 100 days. Now, of course, there has been a lot of emphasis on his failures, things that he wanted to do but didn't manage to do. But while we're distracted by his crazy behavior, he has managed to negatively impact the lives of many Americans. Take a look.
The president issued a memorandum reestablishing the Mexico City policy, stating that the United States will end the use of taxpayer dollars to fund abortions overseas. It is extreme.
The president himself called it
a ban. I understand.
Is he confused or are you
confused? No, I'm not confused. Iran's additional hostile actions that it took against our Navy vessel are ones that we are not going to sit by and take.
Yes. Sorry,
thank you.
Sorry.
Yes.
So this is a sneak peek of the video, which will be posted in full, like the entire video on YouTube.com/TYTPolitics. So we wanted to give you guys a quick look at what they're working on. And it's a difficult video to watch, especially when you are reminded of how much damage he's been able to do in such a short period of time.
I think you're right to focus on mm-hmm. the fact that the nation and the mainstream media is distracted by he was unable to roll back Obamacare. He's unable even to get the, really a clean launch on tax revisions. And so you begin to talk about his failed presidency. But the truth is the changes, and they are obscene, are going right out the front door of the White House. And we didn't even mention what he's doing to the environment. You know, in that first week, he rolled back mm-hmm. a bunch of environmental standards that involve the dumping of poisons into waterways and totally unchecked, I mean, with utter impunity. So I think that
the companies will police themselves, Mark.
Yeah, exactly. Well, thank the those corporations are responsible.
Yeah. As always, sort of, and it's, I don't blame the mainstream media so much as blaming us, all of us. This is what we've become interested in. It's what I've become interested in to some extent. We, you know, I like to talk about the politics of it during a actual race for the White House or a congressional race or a, but I think this is a little unnecessary. Hang on. It's just, that seems,
I mean,
that was a bit much. I didn't realize that.
A little pretentious.
Yeah. Can't even be bothered to put my collar down. I have so much going on.
Just rustled in. Right.
Yeah. You know, the measurement of whether Trump's has succeeded in his 100 days is totally measured in the way the stories are covered in general, at least on television.
Right.
By whether he succeeded in fulfilling the things that he said he would do. So you measure it by, I'm going to accomplish A, B, C, D, 25 things, and he only accomplished 1.5, he's a failure. That's politics. Like, it doesn't really matter whether he accomplished the things he said. The only thing that matters now, when the race is over, is policy. Politics matter in as far as undermining him. That's why I would oppose literally everything he did, even if I agreed with it. He must be weakened politically. That matters. But that is also a story about policy. My policy is to weaken him politically. The policy goes on. The policy marches on. And in those executive orders, which he literally sends out a press release, Obama issued 18 executive orders, I issued 56.
Yeah.
You know, after the right court criticizes Obama for issuing executive orders. But those executive orders, that's what matters. That's what should be covered. In a sense, I would say, Sean Hannity and Lou Dobbs both went on Fox television and said Trump has pretty much been perfect for 100 days. So there is an argument to make if what you want is him to accomplish and do the kind of presidency, run the manage the kind of White House that he said he'd run, he is. Mm-hmm. He is. The stuff that required help from others, we knew he'd fail at because he's incompetent at working with other people. So we decide that he is a failure because he didn't meet this list. That's a political list. The policy, he's effective. He is an effective president at undermining democracy and undermining the environment, at undermining voter rights, at undermining any number of things that so skillfully were put together by our reporters.
What I also think is interesting is his strategy of just kind of flooding the news cycle day in and day out with so much that it's hard for anyone to hold him accountable for everything, right? Mm-hmm. And so the dentist being able to, you know, dump mercury without that, any oversight, without them being checked on that. I mean, quite honestly, I didn't really know much about that story because that was a minor story compared to everything else that he's been doing.
It was a big story for 6 hours Tuesday the 47th day of his presidency.
But he's busy talking shit to North Korea,
And then Sean Spicer said, hey, Hitler didn't gas anybody,
And then that's the thing. The media loves to focus on the rhetoric because that's red meat. You know, that'll get the clicks, that will make the headlines, that'll get people to pay attention. But in essence, even though those offensive words and statements by Sean Spicer or other members of Trump's administration, do get under people's skin, and I understand people want to hear about it, it doesn't actually affect people's lives as much as, you know,
right.
the mercury
totally.
in the environment and things like that. And so, look, It's hard for me personally to not feel like I'm failing at my job because I can't keep up.
That's right. And we fall victim to it. We talk about when Sean Spicer says he didn't gas his, you know, you're like, what the? You know, that's it's exactly what he does. When Trump said, I don't know whether you guys covered it, I couldn't play it enough. You know, he's reading the prompter. He's so dim-witted. Like, I know he knows the word is Nazi, but when he sees it on a prompter and goes, Nazi, that's because he doesn't read.
Sure.
People who don't read don't see that, and then so are they Nazi. Right, that's Nazi. Of course, that's how you say it, right? And I get fascinated by that. I love it. The Jimmy Kimmel video is one of the greatest videos I've ever seen of Trump. You seen this yet?
No, I haven't seen it.
He moves stuff around because he's got OCD. Yeah. He's like, and also sometimes it's this, it'll be his drink, but he doesn't want it in front. So he's like, he just pushes it in front of the guy next to him. And I mean, and it's like 17 things. And Kimmel said one of their TV watchers found it, and it's brilliant. And
I think that might be a tactic and a strategy because when I did speech and debate, the speech coach told us that when you go into the room, you want to dominate that room.
Totally.
And one way that you show strength is you start moving furniture around to make the environment comfortable for yourself.
It's what he's doing.
And so,
and it's funny because no matter how close his glass of water or papers are, he moves it forward, right? He sits down and he's like, okay, huh? How you doing? Move that there. He's just moving stuff.
Yeah,
but even when it's well in front of him, if this were the front of the desk, even if it's already there,
realize that. So he pushes stuff further away.
And then a couple times he took the glass and he was just like, pushed it in front of the other guy.
Wild.
It's really weird.
I didn't know that wrinkle. But you know something, Anna? There's a lot of this where we give Trump credit for being sort of the architect of something that is deliberately designed to take control of the room. Now, it may be, and this whole thing, I didn't know about it. So maybe this pushing of the drink or moving papers, maybe that is effective, and he learned that somewhere from his dad, you know. Mm-hmm. But I think he's incompetent on a level that we've never seen before.
Right.
I don't give him credit for being the architect or choreographer of anything. I think he's utterly inept.
Yeah.
And I mean, that extends to everything. So I think ascribing any strategy to virtually anything he's doing is a mistake.
Except he has undeniable some political skill. Like it is not a political skill that we have previously championed. But he has political skill. He is able to communicate, do what Reagan did, and Clinton to some extent, which is bypass the media and just reach the voter, right? The manner he has of talking, that manner that to you and to me and to Anna reflects incompetence to a degree we cannot fathom, has managed to work to some degree, whether he has it accidentally. I mean, it's what made him an effective host of The Apprentice. It's why when the first season of The Apprentice, I watched 4 episodes and I was like, this is a neat idea.
Yeah.
And this Trump's sort of kind of fun. He just sort of, you know, and I remember telling Michael, sure, like, hey, it's kind of fun. And that's when Michael said, that's the worst guy in America. I won't watch that show. I want anything to do with him. Don't fall for it. He's the worst person you've ever seen.
I was like,
Jesus, okay, whatever. Overreacting, Michael. And then it turned out, nope, yeah.
Michael was right.
Yeah.
I think what you just said is so true, especially when you consider that during this past election, one thing that I personally heard over and over again, as I was trying to reason with Trump supporters, was that I was elitist. And then today, I listened to Trump give his speech at an NRA event, and he speaks in incomplete sentences. He speaks as if, you know, English is his second language, and I want to rip my hair out. But then I realized that very casual way of speaking does resonate with a lot of people who feel like they've been left behind by politicians that speak the way we want them to speak.
Well, you know, George Bush the Younger certainly had that same thing, mm-hmm, right? That kind of across the fence style,
yeah,
awkward with the language. And as you say, he appealed to people who you would think wouldn't necessarily go for that, and they're looking for an orator and a leader who can be skilled at oratory. Mm-hmm. But as you say, there is something about that across the fence style. Having said that, where he just came off one of the great speakers and great orators in Barack Obama. I mean, he spoke and does speak so well, mm-hmm, and he was obviously able to put a pretty significant electorate together.
These are as we've learned now, I think finally, like, this is a popularity contest to run for president. It's not always at the local level. It can be a little more substantive at the local level. It doesn't mean that we have to have an idiot in charge. It just means that whoever the smart person is also has a significant amount of political skill. It is not an accident to me that the last two Democratic presidents disappointed in their effectiveness to maintain a progressive agenda. Bill Clinton didn't even try. Obama disappointed in it. I you know, then progressives can debate to what extent he disappointed. But they were both truly skilled politicians. Mm-hmm. And I don't mean skilled politicians the way Cenk derisively says it. They were good. They got beyond that. So, you know, if Barack Obama had run again despite this climate, Barack Obama would be in his third term as president of the United States right now.
You really think so?
Oh, I believe firmly. Mm-hmm. I believe it is Hillary Clinton's inability to affect things as a politician politically that doomed her. The fact of the matter is, you know, we would all be better off right now if we were complaining and first of all, we'd be focused right now on, Jesus, will these guys let up with the Benghazi investigations, right? Because that's what right. we'd be in the middle of. And that, by the way, is one reason why I didn't want Hillary to run. And as always, in this, we react and wait. And what Cenk has tried diligently and effectively to get us to change the way we think about for 15 years now, or however long we've been on the air, it feels longer. I don't mean this show. Actually, I do. Is stop panicking about what the right will say, right? Mm-hmm. But we still do. We still do. And I want to actually.
And so you're saying you succumb to that a little bit also.
I totally. We all succumb to it. That said, Hillary, and I'm not trying to rehash things, but Hillary was an ineffective politician, having nothing to do with whether she would have been an effective president. I think that four or 8 years, we would have had an interesting debate. And my guess is that she would have surprised us, that she would have been. We know she would have been effective at some things, and I think even for progressives, she would have surprised us. We're obviously never going to know.
Right. So, look, I think the big takeaway from that great video that TYT Politics is planning on publishing this Saturday on their site or on their channel is don't focus too much on the rhetoric and the non-policy components of this administration. It's a strategy to distract, and in reality, what they're doing behind the scenes, what goes under the radar, does have an incredibly negative impact on so many Americans today. And so I will be more aware of that moving forward. And I do really want you guys to check out the full video on youtube.com/TYT Politics. It will go up this weekend.
Remember, last thing I'll say, and sure. I'm sorry to keep going.
But yeah, no problem.
Lou Dobbs and Sean Hannity think he's crushing it. They're not just saying that. They actually mm-hmm. believe it, because this list of things that TYT Politics has, they think.
That's what
terrific.
They wanted. Yeah,
great.
That's right.
Great work, despite an obstructionist Democrats and weak Republicans in their mind. He's gotten all these things done. He said he was going to do this. He was going to shrink government. He was going to let the private sector dominate, and that is precisely what he's done. I read this somewhere, I think on Twitter. I'm just curious, and maybe I'm way off base or I misinterpreted. I didn't do enough reading into it. I read his Wikipedia page on it, so I might be. But, you know, every time they cut funding internationally for abortion, everyone ought to remind him that the country in the world with the most liberal abortion policy is Israel, which is the country that the right wants to give most of its money to. So it just strikes me as interesting that we're comfortable giving money to Israel and comfortable with Israeli abortions, but yet somehow we can't let poor Mexicans have abortions.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned
that. I actually did not know that.
It's pretty interesting, and according to Wikipedia.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned abortion, because it's the coda to all of this, which is that the religious right, in addition to Sean Hannity and Lou Dobbs, as Ben says, the religious right is very happy with Donald Trump. I mean, the attack on Planned Parenthood, the successful attack on Planned Parenthood, and the successful placement of a Supreme Court justice who will clearly work against a woman's right to choose. These are things that are victories for the far right, as represented by the holy rollers.
Yeah.
So they're happy. And you know, last thing, and then I'll shut up. Mm-hmm. Ben, I'm in mentioning the contradictions. I just thought, boy, you can put into the same basket of contradictions the declaration of a fight on terrorism, but then of course the funding and totally rolling around in bed with Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, I mean, so it's amazing, because some of Trump's most avid fans and supporters claim to be so against Saudi Arabia, right? And so in favor of Donald Trump being the president. And I don't know. I mean, it's interesting to see. Look, previous administrations, of course, maintained friendly relationships with Saudi Arabia, which was ridiculous, especially for the reasons you just mentioned right now. You know, we have this global fight on terrorism, and you know, they're not exactly great in Saudi Arabia when it comes to human rights. But now Trump is continuing that type of policy, and I mean, his naysayers don't seem to have, I mean, the naysayers regarding those types of relationships don't seem to have anything negative to say about it. So anyway, moving on to some other news today. Donald Trump gave an interview to Reuters, and during that 45-minute conversation, the issue of North Korea and possible military action took place. Now, I want you to hear what Donald Trump had to say about North Korea, and I'll give you some more context. Take a look.
There's a chance that we could end up having a major, major conflict with North Korea. Absolutely.
Now, Trump's administration has not been shy about mentioning that military action could possibly take place if diplomatic strategies fail. So he says that we'd love to solve things diplomatically, but it's very difficult. He and his administration are now emphasizing by preparing a variety of new economic sanctions while not taking the military option off the table. Interestingly enough, there are members of the Republican Party and also GOP strategists that actually think this is a bad idea. Case in point, Lawrence O'Donnell had a GOP strategist on his show recently, Rick Wilson, and here's what he had to say about Trump's policy regarding North Korea.
Donald Trump keeps looking at these things as a real estate negotiation with a lot of bluster and a lot of bluffing, and fails to realize that we're dealing with a country that is not a rational actor and that is poised to do damage to a significant ally of ours if we miscalculate on this thing. This could get out of hand. And a lot of people could die unless Donald Trump leaves this to the grown-ups. I would much rather have McMaster and Mattis and even Rex Tillerson handling this right now than this verbally incontinent man-child who feels like he's moving little toy soldiers around the board.
Well, Rex Tillerson did speak to the UN Security Council about this particular issue.
Rex Tillerson.
And here's what he had to say.
All options for responding to future provocation must remain on the table. Diplomatic and financial levers of power will be backed up by a willingness to counteract North Korean aggression with military action, if necessary. We much prefer a negotiated solution to this problem, but we are committed to defending ourselves and our allies against North Korean aggression.
Rex Tillerson, by the way, apparently is ready to drink a tremendous amount of water.
Was there quite a
pitcher? It was just a giant pitcher there. He was ready at any moment. Rex Tillerson at any moment needs four glasses.
No one is more detail oriented than you are, because I didn't even notice the pitcher of water.
Couldn't take my eyes off.
But what do you guys make of all this? Obviously North Korea has been a problem for a long time. They've done provocative things for a long time, and now all of a sudden you have an administration that doesn't seem to think before they speak, and you know, amplifying the rhetoric could lead to innocent people in our allied countries losing their lives.
Well, that's certainly the biggest point of departure here. I was going to ask you guys, from a substantive policy standpoint, has there really been any departure from that which was the policy of the administration prior? I'm not talking about, again, the rhetoric is not helping, but I think we're kind of caught here from a policy standpoint, and I don't know, I'm really asking legitimately, does it seem to you that there really is a departure from the Obama administration's posture toward North Korea?
Well, we didn't get close to war with North Korea during the Obama administration, so if we're at all closer, then there is a departure. We don't really know, right? Mm-hmm. Because if we're, you know, we don't know what those diplomatic negotiations are. I do know that Donald Trump is not interested in the world, has never, ever been interested in the world, certainly not interested in a place where there's no chance he's ever going to build a hotel, and if he did, nobody's going to go. Rex Tillerson, who I loved everything Rick Wilson had to say except the mention of those two words, Rex Tillerson.
Right.
But I hear you. I would also rather have Rex Tillerson than Donald Trump run it, because Rex Tillerson did run a company that his dad didn't sort of enable him to run. You know, right. It's Rick Tillerson. Rick Tillerson.
He's demonstrated some competence.
He demonstrated competence in the business world, right? I mean, he is one of the 35 least qualified people to be Secretary of State in the planet.
Of course.
But it doesn't mean he can't be a millionaire and have a good life. I don't begrudge him that. So I don't feel confident with Rex Tillerson there because I don't think he understands foreign affairs or the world, right? Mm-hmm. And it needs to be handled as a grown-up job. Grown-ups like Hillary Clinton, like Joe Biden, like John Kerry, those were grown-ups. The Republicans have had ample grown-ups in that job, plenty of grown-ups. Jim Baker, who we disagree with politically on everything, grown-up, would know how to handle this, right? George Shultz knew how to handle this. So Donald Trump is a giant, egotistical, narcissistic, inconsistent fraud. And left to handle serious issues where nuclear weapons are at stake and where deep down you know he doesn't care that much, I don't think. Like, I mean, I don't think he wants 100,000 or a million South Koreans to die. But I don't think it's pressing on him like, well, oh, you know, it's not because it's not 100,000 or a million North Carolinians.
So let me give you some more details into that. Some statements that
South
he made.
South Carolinians and maintain the consistency. Damn it.
It's okay. We got it. But I will say that, you know, there is a lot of truth to what you're saying about how he doesn't really seem as engaged or doesn't seem to really care that much about the safety of South Koreans. So a few statements that he made. He also said he wants South Korea to pay for the cost of the anti-missile defense system, which he estimated at $1 billion.
That it's named for, like, unquestionably the bad guy in every John Hughes movie. Mm-hmm. You know, not just Thad, but Thad.
Right. He also said this about Kim Jong-un. He's 27 years old. His father dies, took over a regime. So say what you want, but that is not easy, especially at that age. I'm not giving him credit or not giving him credit. It's really hard to decipher what he's saying. Okay, I'm just saying that it's a very hard thing to do as to whether or not he's rational. I have no opinion on it. I hope he's rational.
When did he say this? Was this in this interview?
This was during the Reuters interview.
What a douche. What an idiot. What a fraud. Jesus, this guy doesn't, like, wait. You have at your disposal, at your beck and call, in 30 seconds, I need to speak to the CIA's North Korea chief expert, and I need to speak to the NSA's expert, and bring General Mattis in here, and with his guy, who will, from a Defense Department point of view, tell me about their military and what Kim Jong-un's relationship is with the military. And I need those guys to fill me in. I need them here in 5 minutes.
Right.
They'll do it, and they'll talk for an hour because they're presumably somewhere, although maybe not because so many positions haven't been filled. General Mattis is a grown-up. So again, I hope. Get him in the room and get his guys in the room. But you do know, you have an opinion on it. Get an opinion on it. He is an unstable actor who may or may not have now or access to soon nuclear weapons, which if he does have them, may not be able to reach Seattle. I doubt it since they can't feed people. Maybe it's just that they choose not to feed people. But
they certainly choose to divert that money to weapons technology.
I'm pretty sure they can reach Seoul, right? And they have a tremendous military short of nuclear weapons that could do tremendous damage to a civilian population, which is 4 minutes away from him. So you can't not have an opinion about it. Have an opinion about it, right? And now he's not. Now the one good thing about that statement is that it's not provocative.
Yeah,
he's not. It's not incendiary toward. But he's not interested in this, man. He never was. We elected somebody who doesn't care, and North Korea is a danger because South Korea is our ally, and the South Korean people, as do the North Korean people, they matter.
Yes.
They matter, and protecting them matters. And so don't go around if South Korea doesn't pay its share. Shut up.
So I think the problem is there are so many problems with the way that North Korea is being handled right now. So on top of the apathy that you just clearly pointed out right now, there's also the issue of, you know, amplifying the rhetoric toward military action. And then there's also the military action that we've already taken. Now, we haven't, you know, put boots on the ground. We haven't, you know, fired any missiles or anything crazy like that. But we have deployed a group of warships and a submarine to that region. That is.
Although I think they're in the Philippines, which is like 1,500 miles away. And Trump, Trump was like, you know, we put them next to North Korea. And I'm like, look at a map, dude. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. North Korea-ish.
So I was going to get to that. So, you know, he announces it. He makes a big deal about it in the media. And then it turns out that it's not even in the right part of the world. And so what happens? You know, North Korea sees him as this incompetent person. And we need to show that we actually have a sound strategy, something that's actually going to, save the lives of our allies. It's going to be effective. You know, the talk about sanctions and pressuring China to cut off economic relations with North Korea is smart, but it's something that China, might be willing to do if you're very clear that there will be serious ramifications for the country if they don't follow suit. So I'm glad they had the meeting with the UN Security Council. I don't know if it's going to lead to anything. I hope there's no military intervention because that's a terrible idea. But really,
that doesn't want to have the UN.
Yeah.
I mean, it's great. Yes, it's their meeting, but the right would like us not to be in the United Nations. Mm-hmm. And now, yeah, thank God that we're in the United Nations.
Yeah, well, he doesn't know right from left. I mean, literally, just on the political spectrum, I think he's just, just bobbing on the sea, on the political sea.
It's just complicated. Who would have known that it's also complicated?
But what
Anna said. My other job was already hard. It turns out this one's harder.
In the words of a great president, Donald Trump, it's also complicated. Who knew it would be so complicated?
Yeah.
But Anna's right, I think, to talk about amping up the rhetoric, because he has a thuggish rhetoric that really does represent a change around this very sensitive, walking on eggshells type situation. Comes this guy who just says a bunch of stuff that doesn't help.
Right.
And that, I think, has been the greatest change. The backroom diplomacy through China, that was tried by the Obama administration. That's kind of been an ongoing avenue. His posture toward this thing, as Ben says, that he may not even, really care about. It's like one more thing I got to do before I got to get to Mar-a-Lago by 5 o'clock on a Friday.
Yeah, I got a golf game to get to.
Look, when you have an unstable actor in the world arena, and I literally, as I start that sentence, I'm not sure which one I'm talking about, right? But let's say I'm talking about Kim Jong-un, right? Mm-hmm. Everyone sees that Donald Trump has no cogent foreign policy, has no sense of the world, has no sense of what America's role is in the world, except pay up or else. That's it.
Yeah.
That's the extent of Donald Trump's foreign policy.
Like,
I mean, I don't even think that's an exaggeration, right? Mm-hmm. I'm sure they're testing him. That's what they do. Kim Jong-un is an unstable actor on the world stage. So they're figuring out this is why this is happening. What's Trump going to do? When you politicize the response, you limit your options and you move yourself closer to boxing yourself into a corner where military strategy is the only option. You can't politicize foreign policy and have it be effective, except in those rare moments when politicizing it achieves the goal that you want. But this needs to be handled discreetly, the way it always is. The fact of the matter is, I'm sure previous administrations, including Dick Cheney's, and Barack Obama's, and George W. Bush and Bill Clinton, they send the smart people, and you talk to China. And then you don't talk about that because that's where it's getting. Hey, we gotta calm this down. Someone can reach Kim Jong-un, almost certainly the Chinese. So there again, a reason to have a really good relationship with China, a vital reason to have. And why? Yeah, they're human rights abusers and they manipulate the currency or don't. I don't remember where it is now in Donald Trump's world. They haven't done it in the last 4 days. That's because of me. I told them not to or else. Right? Yeah. So it needs to be handled deftly. And when you politicize it publicly with that kind of rhetoric, you box yourself into a corner and undermine the efforts of, as Rick Wilson said, the grown-ups in the room who need to handle this situation because it is potentially explosive, literally, for South Koreans.
And China doesn't want to be seen as responding to pressure from Donald
Trump.
That's right.
That's why the point that Ben's making about the backroom quality that this has to have is critical. You leave China no options. Hey, pal, we could have helped you, but now you're out in front. And if anything happens, first of all, you'll take a victory lap and said, I told you I would put pressure on China and they came through.
He's always been, rewarded for the tough talk. Like when he was on reality shows, in his businesses, whatever it is, that type of tough talk is something that you get rewarded for and over again.
Yeah.
But running a business or being a host on a reality show is very different from running a country or dealing with very delicate foreign policy situations. And unfortunately, he doesn't realize that difference. He doesn't see that difference.
I think that's a great point.
And his mouth and his tweets and the things that he puts out there in the public on a regular basis continuously gets him in trouble. Whether it works, in his favor or against him, it happens all the time. It happened with the Muslim ban, where he clearly called it a Muslim ban over and over again on social media. And then when, the the judges were like, hey, we can't allow you to do this travel ban because it's really a Muslim ban. And he denied it. You can't deny it because you keep getting yourself in trouble with your words. He doesn't think before he speaks. And, you know, back in the day when
after he speaks.
And back in the day when President Obama gave these really long press conferences and bored the hell out of me because he had these insanely long pauses in the middle of each sentence. You know, I look back on those days and I'm like, you know what, though? At least he was thinking about what to say.
Because it matters because he's the president.
And it does matter. So we'll see how this all plays out, but it's not looking good. Anyway, I leave you with that before we take our next break. When we come back, a little bit more from that Reuters interview, Trump reflects on what it's like to be president and just how difficult it really is. TYT. I do have some TYT lives for you, but before we get to that, I just want to mention that we do have a post-game show that was pre-recorded with Dave Kohler. He is discussing
tennis.
I want to watch this. Critiquing Cenk on French politics. Oh. That's one of the topics. He loves to critique Cenk. Obituaries and new The Times obituary documentary.
Yeah, there's a new documentary from The Times on
obituary.
I mean, there's a documentary about The Times obituary.
Right.
It's really cool.
Is it really?
I mean, it looks cool. I haven't seen it.
Until you mentioned that last thing, it was like that was a journalism school lesson in how not to write a tease. Dave Kohler will be on to critique Cenk on French foreign policy, and he'll also be talking about obituaries. So stick around for the postgame show.
Yeah. The topic selection's the best. He will also discuss...
Honey, we can leave right at 5.
Yeah. He'll also discuss Latin American news. Sounds broad, but I would speculate that he's probably going to talk about Venezuela, which I wish we had time to do more coverage of.
Here's the thing. Whenever Dave does anything... No matter what it's about.
It's going to be good.
It ends up being hilarious.
It's going to be so good. I love it. Yeah. Some TYT lives for you. Game Over tweets, freaking stunning. A person who is king of bankruptcies for not paying his bills is now demanding countries pay up for protection in regard to Trump demanding that South Korea pay for the THAAD.
I can't believe we couldn't beat this guy. I can't believe it.
Yeah.
It's really staggering.
All right, Garfield says it resonates because they want simple answers to complex problems and prefer a mouthpiece of frustration than a voice of explanation in regard to Trump's rhetoric and third grade talk.
I do it all the time. I'm tired. I got into an discussion with my wife about it. Like, I'm done debating it. Like, it's just true. It resonates with some people. I don't know why. You know, it's worked. They're not all monsters, the people it resonates with. You know, we don't need to convince all of them. We just need to convince a good 22% of them, and then we can be done with this guy as soon as possible.
I just feel like I make this mistake a lot. I make the mistake of thinking that people consume as much news as I do, but of course they don't. I mean, it takes all day to consume all the news that I do, right? All the news that we do, because it's what we do for work. A lot of people have mouths to feed. You know, they have families to take care of, bills to pay.
And it's boring and they feel disconnected from it.
And I don't blame them for thinking it's boring. Sometimes I'm reading some of these stories and I'm like, oh my God. Especially the stories that John picks sometimes. But...
Wow.
But
he's not even here.
But really. Talk about him. Right, guy's not here to defend himself. But you know, it's a TV world, and it may not be television, it may be the internet, but whatever way you're seeing just a snapshot of someone, Trump was able to maximize, and by the way, the people who voted for him, I mean, the rabid Trump supporters, as Ben says, some voted for him, and there's like, they're voting for business reasons, there are a lot of very smart people who voted for Donald Trump, but there are also people who sort of blindly said, yeah, I'm looking for somebody to shake it up and I'm sick of the system. And they're sort of
there are people who voted for Barack Obama twice and then voted for Donald Trump. That exists.
Yeah, most certainly. Exactly right.
But I guess the point I'm trying to make is that he comes across that box, whatever that box or device is, he comes across in a way that's manicured by the media. They see the media paying all this attention to this guy. And I think that does help propel him in whatever way. And for some people, the more the media pillories him, the more they like him. Because the media is a bunch of a-holes anyway, and what do they know? And, you know, there's probably some truth to that. So I guess what I'm saying is this question of how much news you take in, and where you get your information is an important one. And ultimately, people just get a snapshot, and that's what they got in this last election. And we end up with, the result we end up with.
Right. All right. Well, there was more out of Donald Trump's interview with Reuters. A lot of controversial things were said. And among those controversial things was Trump's shock and surprise at what it would be like to be the president of the United States. Take a listen.
I loved my previous life. I loved my previous life. I had so many things going. I actually, this is more work than in my previous life. I thought it would be easier. I thought it was more of a, I'm a details-oriented person. I think you would say that. But I do miss my old life.
The thing is, how would anyone know that being president is a lot of work? I mean, I would just think that it'd be super easy and you would get to, you know, just say that you want certain things and then you would go unchecked or unchallenged. I think that's what his statement is really about. Because when you are running a company, when you are a CEO or an owner of a company, whatever it is, you essentially have the final word in most situations, unless, you know, someone owns, you know, more than you do, and you guys,
but that's why he's comfortable with the executive
right.
orders.
But he's used to, yeah, that's exactly right. Like, he's used to just getting what he wants. He's used to having his family hand over all the money, hand over all the companies. He gets to tell people whether they're fired or they can keep their jobs. He thought that the presidency was something that would go unchecked, that he could sign a travel ban as an executive order, and that's it. I mean, what Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, what is that? These judges get to challenge me. These federal judges get to challenge me. It's hard work, right? And one thing that I think he really needs to work on and really lacks in is the ability to have conversations and negotiate. He talks about being a good deal maker. He doesn't know how to make deals because in his world, whatever he says goes and you don't have to make a deal.
He's good at making a deal when he has all the leverage.
Right.
Everyone's good at that. He's rich. He's often had leverage. That's it. It's not complicated. He's not some sophisticated. He has no insight into the human soul.
By the way, he's not detail oriented. What
no,
a load of
my
crap
God,
that is.
He couldn't be less detail oriented. He's detail disoriented. Actually, I thought it would be easier. Actually, he doesn't even know what the word actually means. Like he's like, actually, this one's harder. You know, everybody's like, what? No shit, this one's harder. It's the hardest job in the world. Everyone would have told you that. Everyone told you that.
And apparently he's also struggling with some of the downsides of being president. And obviously you will miss solitude and you will miss privacy. Those are two things that you are unlikely to have while you're president. And it came as a little bit of a shock for him. He says, and while I've had very little privacy in my old life, because, you know, I've been famous for a long time, I really, this is much less privacy than I've seen before. This is, you know, something that's really amazing. At the same time, you're really into your own cocoon because there's such massive protection that you really can't go anywhere.
Except to Florida.
Yeah, except you do go somewhere every weekend and, you know, make a huge commercial out of it so you can drum up business from Mar-a-Lago. But
they don't know how that got on the website, the State Department. They took it off. How did it get on there? I don't know. Just an accident.
Anyway, he also says, I like to drive. I can't drive anymore.
I'll tell you what he likes to do. He likes to nail women, and he can't do that the way he was doing pace that he was before. And that's what that whole bite about security and, I mean, it's all about that. This guy is as one-dimensional as they come. He's a rich guy who likes to take advantage of situations.
He's always been rich. He's still rich and, likes to take advantage of his wealth and is sort of oddly unable to now. But, you know, this is exactly it. This conversation is the very conversation that convinces no one to abandon that guy politically.
Mm-hmm.
No one. Like, this is three elites talking about how he's an idiot. And he is an idiot and he's a fraud. And what gets me is that we didn't see it, that not enough people saw, like you needed 12 seconds of hearing him be like, okay, that guy can't be president. Like, I don't think I have some great skill in that. I think it was obvious to everyone, but they decided to ignore it, I think, because they hated the person he was running against. But the only thing that will ever convince people is if every day, and I think we should do it here, and I will call our friend afterwards, but there should be a daily segment on this show called Trump's War on the Working Class. And every day, because there is something every day to talk about. We started the show talking about it. And if every day in the paper they read or on the news that they see, there was Trump's war on the working class, the thing he did today that you think might help you but is going to raise your insurance premiums, or if you live in one of the states where under his new health care plan they can throw people with pre-existing conditions off, is going to, your son has early onset diabetes, nope, they're not going to cover it, and he's either going to die or you're going to spend $29,000 a month on his medicine. So if we did those stories on a regular basis, they're not as fun, we don't get to point fingers at this fraudulent imbecile who's running our country, but it might change some people's minds. Like, wow, I didn't know that. I didn't realize that, because the list is long.
It is.
While
it is.
We focus on the politics, we, meaning the media in general, focus on the politics, the policy is hideous, and it helps one tiny group of people, and it hurts millions and millions and millions of people
on
a daily
basis. It does, and people from all different backgrounds and demographics. I mean, some of the stuff that he has done is so unnecessary, gratuitous. Like, it doesn't even really help him and his rich cronies all that much for him to do it. So, you know, the home mortgage thing that he did with the FHA loans, very first day that he was inaugurated, right? That he did away with basically a discount that would save homeowners almost $500 or more a year in their mortgage costs. And then, you know, what he did with college students. Obama's administration passed some protections for college students so they wouldn't be prey to some of these devious, loan collectors. And he did away with those protections. And that's another thing that no one talks about. We covered it on the show. I did a Facebook Originals about it. But he's done so much damage to so many people. And you're right, Ben. Him talking about, you know, things that make him sound stupid have no impact on his supporters.
None.
But what
None.
Does have an impact is the economic burden that they will face or are currently facing due to him and his administration.
And where Democrats don't stand up to him and fight it, include them in Trump's war on the working class. And there'll be plenty of instances when they don't. But I would do it every day. And by the way, we can't get through an hour without 5 minutes on today's issue of Trump's war on the working class. If he didn't do something specific that day, let's go back and remind people about what he did for college students, what he did to home mortgage, what he's doing, what he's trying to do with healthcare. I mean, there's 50 things he's done with healthcare, what he's doing in the environment. He's affecting your drinking water. He's affecting your clean air.
Right.
Your kids' clean air. There's a way to frame those stories that, again, while I suspect make people who are slumbering through this, either because they are legitimately disinterested and not interested in the world around them, or more likely, it's just they got other stuff going on, and they rightly think the Democratic Party didn't look out for him. And here was a guy who sounded different and refreshing.
Yeah.
Plus, there are those who go, I get it, he's stupid. Okay, but by showing them substantive things and damages that he's done along the way, that first piece that they put together, the first 100 days, I mean, that's a brilliant compilation of some of those things.
Because we forget. There's so much going on, and things are moving so quickly that you forget some of the policies that he has been effective on. All right, I want to do one more quick story before we take our second break, so let's get to that. Congress has just dodged a government shutdown. Well, at least for the next week. So members of both chambers will return next week to resume work on a measure to keep the government running through September. This is a recycled story. It happens every year, and it's super frustrating. But of course, Democrats and Republicans have to come to some agreement regarding the budget. And of course, Republicans think that there's too much money being spent. Democrats just disagree with Republicans and Trump. Trump has some disagreements with Republicans. There's a lot of disagreement all over the place. But at least for the next week, there will not be a government shutdown. Now, thanks to the threat of a filibuster, any final deal does need to attract the votes of at least 8 Democrats to pass the Senate. Now, other obstacles that are playing a role this time around include the fact that Trump is unpopular, right? Even among some Republican constituents. So you have Republican members of Congress who don't like what Trump is proposing because they know that if they vote in favor of it, it won't bode well with their constituents. Also, the necessity of Democratic support, which I just mentioned. And Republicans think that, you know, Trump's proposal does spend too much. And they also think that, you know, what Democrats want spends too much. So we'll see how this all plays out. But at least for the next week, the government will not be shut down.
Yeah, well, this is, I mean, the notion that Democrats could actually be blamed for a government shutdown where they
controls
a little. levels of power is a little bit. Good luck with that, fellas. I'm sure that'll carry the day. God damn those Democrats who don't control the House, Senate, or the White House. Damn them. They've
it's
done
Obama's
it again.
Fault.
Yeah. Good luck on that. Yeah. So and Trump, they're what's he tying it to? Paying for the wall, right?
Right. He's trying to tack on some wall money.
And today he was speaking to the NRA and about a number of things, and the wall did come up. And of course, you hear people in that audience shouting, "Build a wall! Build a wall!" And I really thought that once Americans realize that Mexico is not paying for that wall, we're paying for that wall, they might change their minds. Especially, and I'm guessing most people don't know this, especially if immigration from Mexico is already down, and if you take into account the number of undocumented immigrants leaving versus the number coming in, it's below net zero.
Right, but it's operating at a negative.
It's operating at a negative, so it's a gigantic waste of our resources. So you can't say that you're a fiscal conservative while you're simultaneously supporting a wall that will literally do nothing to improve the country.
It was a campaign stunt, the wall. The idea that we would actually fund it is
what Lindsey Graham said. Lindsey Graham said the wall was a metaphor.
Oh, is that real? Yeah. That's the only way he could stomach it.
So let's, before we take the break, here's this quote. Should any political party attempt to abolish Social Security, unemployment insurance, and eliminate labor laws and farm programs, you would not hear of that party again in our political history. There's a tiny splinter group, of course, that believes you can do these things. Among them, a few Texas oil millionaires and an occasional politician or businessman from other areas. Their number is negligible, and they are stupid. Dwight David Eisenhower.
Wow.
Right. So, but they didn't get that message. Republicans still, nope, let's cut these programs. Let's cut. And, now the programs' names have changed to some extent of what they want to cut. People like their programs. People need their programs. That is not why this country runs at a deficit. And I agree the part at the end that the people who want to cut them, they are short-sighted and they are stupid.
Yeah.
And mean.
Yep. All right, let's take one more break. When we come back, I will talk to you about what farmers think about Donald Trump. All right? This is a really important story, so make sure you come back. Hey, guys, welcome back to the show. You can kind of see what we do during the breaks. We don't talk to each other, we just.
So your Twitter likes Ben's.
When's the break over, Anna?
Okay, so I do want to quickly read some TYT Lives and then get to the final story that I've been dying to do. Kiki Wellington says to Trump regarding how much he misses his old life, "Trust me, we all miss your old life."
Well said.
Gabby Morita says, "That statement is all the proof I need to know that Trump has never genuinely done an honest day's work in his life." And the mathematician says, "It's not even that, Anna. Trump really believed he could delegate the responsibilities of fucking U.S. government to an army of people." Which is true. Remember when he, who did he want at first? Was it Kasich as VP?
Kasich talks about that offer.
Where they were like offered Kasich and be like, "Hey, you get to run the country, man."
Yeah, no, he told him, he's like, you'd get to be in charge of domestic and foreign policy.
Domestic and foreign policy.
Yeah.
Kasich, what is the president going to do? He says, well, he's going to be out there making America great again.
Right. Oh, that's right.
And that's what he is a photo op president. He wants to be on tour. He likes to play to those halls. And Anna mentioned it before.
Still holding political rallies.
He loves that. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And he loves that reaction he gets in the room. And that keeps him on the tough rhetoric rails that we talk about. And that's what Anna was talking about before.
Yeah.
That's why it's so vital to oppose him strongly every step of the way and weaken him politically every step of the way. And that is, to me, that's what I see our job as.
Yeah.
Because if you weaken him, then eventually those rallies, they're not going to be as enthusiastic. I mean, right now we're at the Washington Post poll this last weekend with that shocking number of 1% of Trump voters are disappointed in him a little and 1% a lot.
Mm-hmm.
2% of voters disappointed in their choice. Like, that base is not moved. So we start to move that base. Those rallies start getting, instead of 9,000 people, there's 4,600 and there's a lot of empty seats and they're not as enthusiastic and they get tired of him. Then he's damaged, and then that gives cover to the incredibly weak, but nonetheless, we have to count on them, members of Congress who can then investigate him meaningfully. Mm-hmm. And again, because of issues like North Korea, I want him out, man. I want him out because I hate Mike Pence, but I do not think Mike Pence will, I think Mike Pence is far less likely to bumble into some sort of national catastrophe.
I just think Mike Pence is so much more tactful, and as I think he wants the same things as Trump.
He was a governor. He's a governor. He governed. Yeah,
he was a terrible governor.
But yeah. It's a different kind of enemy, and he's not a fool. Mm-hmm. Mike Pence is not a fool.
Yeah, he's reckless in other ways, but on the North Korea thing, on some of these international.
Yeah, and most of the ways that Pence is reckless on, Trump is also reckless.
Exactly.
So. You just take and I get it. I think the dangers of that is that a Mike Pence who takes over for Trump, the danger is that it's a significant political danger because whoever takes over for Trump will be seen as, whew, okay, look, the president didn't tweet anything today. He will manage things. He will have his hideous, gay-hating, anti-woman government, right, will seem competent compared to Donald Trump, which will help him get reelected and puts, whereas Donald Trump seems like, but I actually think for the good of the country, that's a risk we have to take.
Right.
You know, my nightmare scenario was, of course, that Mike Pence, or Donald Trump quits or just gets bored or forgets to come back from Mar-a-Lago, you know, and Mike Pence takes over as president, like they're calling and they're like, he's played 90 straight holes, man. I don't think he's coming back. That's how he's going to resign, you know. Donald Trump, like, you haven't heard from him in weeks, and he'll be like, I shot an 82. Finally, it was on my 38th round. And the Democrats, Mike Pence will seem moderate just because the alternative is an insane person. And then it'll be like Evan Bayh, and we'll have Evan Bayh and Mike Pence running for president, and they'll just, then I'll move to Canada. Like that, that's what'll do it.
Right. You're
like an incredibly conservative Democrat against a very conservative Republican. Right. So somebody really will be just to the right of center far right.
I'm already incredibly discouraged and have to give myself a pep talk every single day about coming to work and feeling like it all matters. So, like, I don't even want to think about those disaster scenarios because I'm already super discouraged. And I shouldn't be, maybe, right? For the sake of, you know, our audience and stuff.
Well, there are many who would say that this administration will shock the Democrats into a more progressive posture. That hasn't happened yet.
That hasn't happened. If anything, it will desensitize us to
general conservatism.
It's politics, as always. Again, Bill Clinton, Barack Obama, they were magical politicians, not policy, politicians. The way it gets overcome is that somebody, and hopefully it's a progressive, is able to communicate in an effective, and meaningful way. If you want to, you should. I swear to God, Annie, you should go home. You should put your glasses on, keep your hair in the bun, and then do the thing in the movies.
She looks so nerdy, but she lets her hair down.
Totally.
Takes her glasses off.
Oh, you'll have a great weekend.
Yeah. All right, let's get to the final story for the first hour. Farmers throughout the country are thinking about what their next steps will be now that Donald Trump has been elected and his tough rhetoric regarding undocumented immigration continues on. Now, CNN recently spoke to a farmer in a blue state, California. His name is Joel Del Boscaya, and here's what he has to say about Donald Trump and the impact that he has already had on this man's farm. Take a look.
Farmer Joe Del Bosque, the son of Mexican migrants, couldn't get enough workers this year. Problems that escalated after the election.
When he talks about mass deportations, that makes me nervous. Putting a wall up on the border, that makes me nervous.
And that affects your bottom line.
It does, because we can grow the crops, but then we can't pick them.
So that small snippet was part of a larger video or segment, I should say, that CNN did, where they spoke to voters in blue states just to see how they're feeling about Trump's administration
so far.
Voters
in blue states?
Voters in blue states. So they have a segment called Red, Purple, and Blue. And so they just kind of want to get a sense of what people throughout the country are feeling right now about Trump's presidency. And that small snippet, to me, was the most relevant because it really hones in on something that people don't realize, right? So they think, okay, undocumented immigrants, they're coming in, they're taking our jobs, we need to get rid of them because we have unemployed U.S. citizens that should be employed in those jobs. But what people fail to realize, and I know that this argument sounds ridiculous on its face, is that Americans don't want those jobs. Even if the farmers increase the wage, even if the farmers offer benefits, people do not want to do those jobs. And I have data on that, okay? This is an ongoing issue. It happened during Obama's administration, because if you can remember, Obama did crack down on undocumented immigrants pretty harshly early on in his first term, and it hurt farms considerably. Okay, so let me give you some examples. The Los Angeles Times wrote about this a while ago, and they said that Chalmers R. Carr III, the president of Titan Farms, a South
Chalmers R. Carr III.
We've been in the farming business now for several generations, Anna.
So he's the president of Titan Farms, a South Carolina peach giant. He told lawmakers at a 2013 hearing that he advertised 2,000 job openings from 2010 through 2012. He said he was paying $9.39 an hour, $2 more than the state's minimum wage at the time. He hired 483 U.S. applicants, slightly less than a quarter of what he needed. 109 didn't show up on the first day. Another 321 of them quit, the vast majority in the first 2 days. Only 31 lasted for the entire peach season. Also, when
the peach season's too long, by the way, the playoffs,
yeah,
like they take
right,
forever.
Right, exactly.
So, yeah. And that's another thing, though. So the way farming works is obviously for a lot of crops, it's seasonal. And so it's really difficult labor for a long time. And then all of a sudden, you know, there's no work.
$7.39 was the minimum wage in South Carolina.
Yeah.
$7.39. I lived in South Carolina for 5 years. You don't need a lot of money, but you need more than $7.39 an hour. And
yeah.
That's crazy. And some guy named Chalmers R. Carr III, a South Carolina peach giant, he and Beatrice Carr, his lovely bride, they can afford more than $7.39.
Yeah, I'm guessing.
An hour.
But
yeah. He paid $9.39.
But to Anna's point, yeah, let's say you take it up to $11 an hour. I don't know that you still can fill the field.
Yeah, the point is, right, those jobs aren't getting filled. And I presume he could have filled them with, his point is that he could have filled them with immigrants, right?
That's the big, even as Trump was beginning his rhetoric, his anti-immigrant rhetoric, that was the big secret, that this country, the engine of so much of what drives this country is really fueled by illegal immigrants, people who are here in some status that is not officially recognized as legal. And the agricultural interests are top of the list. We're right to focus on them, but you can extend and broaden that focus to restaurants. I mean, even high-end restaurants,
yeah,
and the clothing industry. I mean, it goes across industries. This
it
is
does.
A country that has sucked up that immigration.
And one thing that I do want to make clear is that, look, a lot of these farmers are not multimillionaires, multibillionaires. A lot of farms, you know, barely make ends meet. And so it's not like we're having a conversation about the fast food industry, where you have these fast food giants bringing in billions in revenue every single year. We're talking about, you know, farmers who want to increase the wages, and they increase the wages as much as they possibly can, right? And it still doesn't attract the, you know, US citizens that they would like to attract. There are more examples, okay? So let me give you another one. When Native unemployed people are referred to NCGA, they're almost without exception hired. Between 1998 and 2011, 97% of referred applicants were hired, but they don't tend to last. In 2011, 245 people were hired out of 268 referred, but only 66.5% of the hired applicants actually showed up to the first day of work. Worse, only 7 lasted to the end of the growing season.
That's unbelievable.
Okay, so one farmer says Mexican workers are far likelier to stick through the season than native-born workers. About 90% were still working 5 months along, compared to less than 10% of native-born workers. I apologize, that's not from a farmer, that's from the Washington Post. Also, some farmers are even giving laborers benefits normally reserved for white-collar professionals, like 401k plans, health insurance, subsidized housing, and profit-sharing bonuses. Full-timers at Silverado Farming, for example, get most of those sweeteners, plus 10 paid vacation days and 8 paid holidays. 9 in 10 agriculture workers in California are still foreign-born, and more than half are undocumented, according to a federal survey. So it's not about wages, it's not about benefits. Farmers are doing what they can to attract, you know, people who are here legally because they don't want to deal with any type of penalty for employing undocumented immigrants, and they just can't do it. It's not working. And so it's a much more complicated and nuanced issue than the right would have you believe. It's not a black and white issue. I know people want simple answers to complex problems, but this requires a real solution, a comprehensive solution, not this, we're going to close our borders, we're going to kick everyone out, we're going to build a big wall, a big beautiful wall. Like, that's not a solution.
So first of all, I love that that it seemed like, my God, we even offered these people health insurance and vacation days and profit sharing and retirement. I mean, they're barely even people when we offered it to them, right? Mm. I mean, they should have that. Every American worker should have that. That's not a good for them for offering it, but they should offer it no matter what. They already should have offered it. I don't know why farm workers are suddenly somehow exempt from that. I get it that many, especially small farms, aren't exactly,
I mean,
as you
most,
say, turning
most Americans
a huge problem.
Are exempt from that,
right,
in this
that's
country.
True. So I don't think this is a radical statement. The reason that the right is against have railed against illegal immigrants is because they're trying to scare us. It's simply, you can say, as always, they scare us with their terrorists, right? We open the borders, as they say, you know, ISIS will sneak in and they'll blow stuff up. Or, as evidenced by Trump's callous and humiliating to an entire race of people, that when he exploits, look at these people whose child was killed by an illegal immigrant. So they're suggesting that they're going to come in and they're going to rape and kill your kids, right? They're going to rape your daughters, they're going to kill, they're going to murder, or they're going to be ISIS members. So that's what it is. They don't care about the worker. They actually want those farms. They want workers, right? We know business wants to exploit those workers. They can, because I don't have to give them health insurance, profit sharing, vacation days, and retirement. That's great. I can pay them $7.39 an hour in South Carolina or whatever the minimum wage is now. Illegal immigration is not a problem in America. It's not an issue. We shouldn't be talking about it. It is unimportant. I get it. There are people out there who will get on my Twitter handle and say, I don't know what I'm talking about. And they're not wrong. I don't know what I'm talking about. Because there are parts of the country where it is relevant. I'm sure if you live in a border town, it has probably affected you in some way, and it has probably disappointed you that there are a bunch of immigrant kids at your schools who don't speak English, and you think it's affected you. And I get it. That is a community that has to deal with a mesh of cultures that have come together, and that community might be ill-equipped to deal with that. But as a general rule in America, it is not a problem. The people who come here are coming here because they goddamn love America. They certainly like it more than where they came from. And they're here because they want to effing work.
Yeah.
It is not a problem. We should not be talking about it. It's irrelevant. They're here. We have a DEA or whatever. Not a DEA. We have ICE. I know we got to go. Again, you're not allowed to have a name ICE. You're not allowed to be in law enforcement and get a cool name because it just makes you feel like a badass and you can act like a badass. Law enforcement is a serious job. You have a name like the FBI. You don't get ICE. That's not cool. You can't. It's like mother of all bombs. You don't get to have you don't get to be, hey, man, I'm ICE. Bang, 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 bang. I'm an ICE. Not right. I get it. We can have immigration and customs enforcement. And when they find someone illegal who's committed a crime, they can throw them out. That's fine. But illegal immigration is not a problem. We shouldn't be talking about it. Basically, we've exploited these people and they've been a boon to our economy and let us eat peach pie.
That's right.
That's exactly
and
right.
And have contributed taxes.
Enormously, yes. Enormously. Far more in than they take out. They're
That's
working.
Right.
Well,
They're
and the
working.
Statistics on crime, as you know, I don't want to get off on this stand, we have to take a break, but the statistics on crime don't bear out any of the president's
predisposition. That's right.
It's not an issue. It's not a problem. It is not a problem.
All right. Let's take our final break. And when we come back, some lighter stories, second hour stories. You don't want to miss it. So we'll see you in just a few minutes.